This is the Navigating Adult ADHD podcast, here to help you navigate and thrive with ADHD in adulthood. I'm your host, Zena, and I was diagnosed at age 36. As with many ADHDers, I have a rebellious and nonconformist style. And that means that there will likely be swearing in the coming episode. Please be mindful of any little people. Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the Navigating Adult ADHD podcast, where today we are going to talk about ADHD in women, what it looks like, why we get misdiagnosed, and a lot of other things that are just really important to know. So before we dive into that, I do have a small, maybe huge favor to ask you all. If you are enjoying this podcast, would you please take a minute or two just to leave us a 5-star review? I'm really keen to help other women who have ADHD to find us so that they too can learn how to manage and thrive with ADHD. So again, I would really appreciate that 5-star review. And if you know of someone who could really benefit from listening, if you want to share it with them, I would hugely appreciate that. So thank you so much, my friends. All right. So what do Simone Biles, Jennifer Lawrence, Emma Watson, Michelle Rodriguez, Whoopi Goldberg, and Lisa Ling have in common? They are all women who have ADHD, and they're also well-known women that you may not have heard of. So 1 in 20 people have ADHD, and the interesting thing is that it impacts women and girls equally as much as it does boys and men. So why is it that there is such a huge gender gap when it comes to diagnosis? The average age for boys to be diagnosed is age 7. So males in general, the average age of diagnosis is age 7. When it comes to females, it is mid to late 30s into our 40s. So if we were to say that the average age is approximately 37, which is probably, to be fair, slightly later than that, it's a 30 plus year age gap. Isn't that wild? And what that means that there are so many girls and so many women living their lives without support, trying to force themselves to be neurotypical and no doubt feeling like something's not quite right underneath the surface. And I'm going to be really honest with you. My heart breaks for those women and for those girls because I know just how hard life was without support, without tools. I struggled hugely, especially in my early 20s or throughout most of my 20s, to be honest. Even my teenage years, when I think about it, I was full of self-loathing. I thought I was meant to be following all of these societal rules and doing it like everyone else, and that I was a bad person because I just didn't want to, or sometimes I just couldn't. I really struggled. I was, as I said, full of self-loathing. I was, you know, there was so much negative self-talk. I was beating myself up. That was just my MO. But I was really miserable on the inside and full of shame for not being like everyone else, and yet trying so hard to pretend like I was. So if my experience is anything to go by, if others out there are experiencing even a fraction of that, I really hope like hell that we can, you know, help to raise awareness and get them the support and the tools and the diagnosis perhaps that they deserve so that they can begin to heal and learn how to manage and thrive with their ADHD. As you can tell, I'm a little passionate and heated today. So most scientists believe adult ADHD remains underdiagnosed, especially in women, because the diagnostic criteria for ADHD was developed for children and specifically based on boys. And because adults with ADHD often have co-occurring conditions, they can sometimes mask the symptoms of ADHD. So it's actually estimated that fewer than 20% of adults with ADHD are currently diagnosed. Now, previously, it was thought that males were more likely to have ADHD than females. And up until I think it was the late 1990s, all tests, all studies, everything was run on males. So, and this is also because it does present differently in females, right? With us being predominantly the inattentive type. So more often we have a busy or a hyperactive mind and it's displayed inwardly instead of outwardly. So therefore, you know, it gets often overlooked. So recently in the ADHD masterclass that I took, I spent some time, actually dedicated an entire slide or a couple of slides to talking about, you know, what ADHD in women can look like. And it is by no means a complete list, but I want to cover some of the things with you here. Okay. So here we go. Moody. Being told that you are moody or you're always up and down. Often feeling frustrated or angry. Having that hyperactive mind, busy mind, and it may also be outwardly hyperactive, but very often we display that, or we present with that very busy hyperactive mind that we can struggle to shut off, okay? Never feeling good enough. People pleasing. Now, women are, you know, raised in a society where we very much are raised to take care of others, or kind of think that we should take care of others. But this is often one of the ways that we mask our symptoms of ADHD by trying to people please. Being all over the place, or referring to yourself or being referred to as a hot mess. All over the place was one of my key symptoms, especially before I decided to go in and get the official diagnosis, was I just felt like I was all over the place all the time. And I just couldn't finish anything. I was going from one thing to the next, not knowing what I was doing or what I was supposed to be doing, all over the place. Being messy, having, you know, stuff everywhere. We often use the pile system. So we will pile things, and it's a system that works for us until it doesn't. And I can attest to this. I have the pile system in many places in my house. We also forget to eat at times. Now this can actually swing down the other end of the scale, where we also binge on food. Binge eating can be an issue. And that can be one of the ways that our ADHD presents as well. All or nothing thinking, very common for us. Being called too much. So whether you're, you know, labeled as too sensitive or too dramatic or too lazy, some form of too much. Fidgeting. One that I do that many of my clients will attest to is on coaching calls. In my chair, I will get up and move around. So I'm forever like repositioning myself and moving around in my chair. But I've also set up my desk with lots of little fidget items, whether it be the rings or the spinners or the squishy balls, all sorts of things to try and, you know, release some of that energy. But actually, sometimes our ability to fidget and our fidgeting is so that we can actually pay attention. It's giving us that additional stimulus that we need so that we can therefore pay attention. But all too often people misunderstand it and they think that we're not paying attention. So being misunderstood is a big one for us. Interrupting people, that's a big one. Struggling to make and keep friends, that can be very common for women with ADHD. Forgetting why we entered a room. Now, I have that one frequently. I will walk into the bedroom because I was on a mission to do something, only to get in there and go, what the heck am I doing? Why am I here? You might relate. Forgetting names. And it can be place names. It could be people names. As soon as I meet someone, I have instantaneously forgotten their name. So now I try to, where possible, write it down. That's what works for me. I'm in a setting and I was at this small coffee group the other day with women, and as soon as I met everyone, I wrote their names down. So I had them there and I could refer to them throughout the meeting. But forgetting names, forgetting places. I have this with, I've traveled extensively all over the world, and people will say to me, oh, but where do you recommend we should go when we're, you know, in California? And I'll be like, I've got lots of cool places and cool photos, but I don't remember the names of the specific things that I saw or the specific cities or towns that I visited. So forgetting names is common. Being a perfectionist, this is one of the ways, again, that we often try to mask our ADHD, is trying to get everything perfect. Overthinking, very, very common for those of us with ADHD. Another reason that we can be kept awake at night is because our brains, you know, we struggle to shut our brains off and we are constantly in that overthinking place. Being overwhelmed or overstimulated, very common. Also being understimulated at times. So as I said, it can kind of swing down opposite ends of the scale. Can't remember what we just read. So for many ADHDers, myself included, we can read a page in a book, get to the end and about to turn the page and go, I have no idea what I just read. So we'll read it again. The same thing will happen. We'll read it a third time. And often we just give up because we can't remember what we just read. Our brain went somewhere else. We read it, but our brain wasn't focused on it. It was off doing something else. Would do well if she applied herself. That is often a comment that is on our report cards. You know, away with the fairies, daydreamer. You know, yeah, would do well if she applied herself. Those are the kinds of things that we've often heard on our school reports. And when you do go in for the diagnosis, if that's, you know, what you choose to pursue, then what they usually do is spend a bit of time looking at your schooling and, you know, your childhood so that they can establish if you have some of these kind of common themes throughout your life. Now, here's the interesting thing is that many of these things on this list, and as I said, it's by no means a complete list, but they are things that all humans do. Right? Everyone gets distracted. Everyone forgets things at times. Some, you know, everyone overthinks things or leaves a mess or gets frustrated. Everybody does. But there's a huge, huge difference between doing these things on occasion, sometimes, and doing them all the time. And as somebody said to me very recently, everyone pees. But if you pee 50 times a day, you are probably going to get it checked because something is different. Now, I wanted to share with you also some of the things that are very common with ADHD. So other things that we as women or anybody actually with ADHD can experience. So some of the things on this list are RSD, which we've touched on briefly on the podcast before, which stands for rejection sensitivity dysphoria. So that is where we are highly sensitive, and we are actually highly sensitive when we have ADHD, but highly sensitive to feelings of rejection or criticism. And it's often the perceived idea that we may be rejected or we may be criticized. And I hate to use the word, what was it? I used it in the masterclass the other day, but it's like some people often will call it like an unreasonable fear of, you know, being criticized or rejected, because what often will happen is we see in a situation that it could happen, potentially, possibly, there may only be a small chance, maybe a 5 or 10% chance, but we avoid that situation completely because of that chance of being criticized or rejected. So we hold ourselves back and say no to a lot of things out of that perceived fear, because it's such an extreme fear for us. And then when we are criticized and rejected, we feel that much more intensely and much more deeply than the neurotypical people, the other people without ADHD. Okay, so that's RSD, rejection sensitivity dysphoria. Other things that are common for women with ADHD to experience are anxiety and depression, addiction. We have kind of a highly addictive side to us, and that is very much to do with our deficiency in dopamine. So because we have less dopamine than, you know, other people without ADHD, we become very easily addicted to things that can produce dopamine for us, that give us that dopamine in return. So therefore, it is very easy for us to become addicted. We also can have a lot of issues with sleep. And in talking to some women with ADHD, they said, wow, it actually makes a lot of sense now, because even as a child, I had so many issues with sleep and my parents could never figure out why. It's like, oh, okay, makes heaps of sense now, right? So, you know, one of the reasons I said before is because our brains are constantly, you know, hyperactive and overthinking, and we can struggle to shut them off. That's part of it. But also we have less serotonin. So those of us with ADHD are estimated to have about 25% less, you know, sort of serotonin in our systems, which actually helps us with sleep and, you know, being able to sleep through or get to sleep easily. So that's another thing that we can work with once we know, hey, I've got ADHD. And when I say that, it's like, you don't have to have the official diagnosis. You can be self-diagnosed as well. And I was for a lot, you know, a good couple of years, I operated as if. So I just wanted to throw that in there. Another one common for us is being time blind, having time blindness. So a struggle to, you know, estimate how long activities will take. So a woman shared with me the other day that she'll often say to somebody, hey, I'm going to get these 10 things done today. And, you know, at the end of the day, the person will be like, so what did you get done? And she'll be like, I got half of one of them done. Because we often overestimate how much we can do in a certain period of time. This was, in fact, my exact experience with the masterclass I taught. And I had said to people, you know what, like, I want to do it in 60 minutes, but I feel like I'm probably going to go to 90. It took me an hour 45, and I was really trying to cut it back. I even cut out a couple of little activities, trying to rein it in. I could have easily gone for 2 hours. But again, it's that time blindness, that inability to estimate how long something will take. So again, this comes back to our executive functions, which I'm not going to touch too much on, but it's an interesting side of ADHD. And sometimes what it may present for people is constantly being late. Or we can swing down the other extreme, and this is me, is I'm always early. It's like I have a fear or a phobia of being late. Another one here is memory issues, as we've talked about before, struggling to remember certain things. So our working memory is, you know, has some executive functioning challenges, shall we say. Also, negative self-talk is incredibly common for women with ADHD. And that is because, or a large part of that is because of the amount of criticism that we have heard at a young age, which I actually want to touch on separately. So I won't go into too much detail just now, but negative self-talk is huge. Hyperfocus, that's one of my favorites, our ability to kind of get tunnel vision, and so much so that we can forget to eat, we can forget plans that we had, we can forget anything. The time of day, it can all of a sudden we come out of our hyperfocus, it's 2 a.m. But our ability to hyperfocus on something that we find interesting and, you know, we're passionate to know more about. And it's a cool skill to have, because we can, you know, we're knowledgeable about the most random things at times. We know so much about certain things, or, you know, we've spent all this time researching something. It's fun and crazy and amazing all at once. Another one here is chronic pain. Unfortunately, that is something that is quite common for women with ADHD. And although I haven't gone and looked at the research behind this, I do think, my educated guess is that this is likely due to a lot of the tension that we hold in our nervous system. Remember, I talked about how our nervous systems are wired differently. I think we talked about that in episode 19. And, you know, we therefore are, you know, getting much more kind of stimulus coming through, and I think we hold a lot of that tension in. Obsessions is another one. I remember this very much when I was younger, but also at times when I've met people, like new people, I've become like obsessed with them and thinking they're going to be like my new best friend. So obsessions is common. And I think it's probably, again, in relation to that dopamine that we're getting from that experience of that thing, or, you know, the thoughts, the time, whatever spent on that thing or that with that person. Challenges regulating our emotions. So emotional dysregulation is incredibly common for ADHDers. And as I said before, we can be highly sensitive, we can feel more deeply, but we can also struggle to process and feel and experience and move through our emotions. Being intuitive is another one. We can often see things that other people can't see. And I know that this is very true for me. having been, you know, with a group of friends and just observing things and knowing things that other people haven't necessarily been able to see or observe. That's a fascinating one, I think. And low self-esteem is also incredibly common for women with ADHD, having low self-confidence and low self-worth. Now, that is the one that I wanted to elaborate a little bit more on as it relates to self-esteem, self-talk, etc. is, and I think I may have touched on this on the podcast before, that a child with ADHD has heard 20,000 more criticisms than that of their peers by age 10. Okay, so at age 10, a person with ADHD, a child rather with ADHD, has heard 20,000 more criticisms than their peers. Isn't that wild in a horrific way? It is just wild. So for those of us, you know, if you're listening to this, you have ADHD or you're exploring the possibility that you do, the likelihood then is that you have also had 20,000 more criticisms by age 10. Now, with females not getting diagnosed until the average age of roughly 37, right, where a male may get diagnosed at around age 7, they can begin to, you know, have tools and systems and structure and support put in place and therefore start to change that, whereas we don't. So we take those criticisms and we make them mean things about us, negative things, bad things, and we try to compensate for them. And that's where we start to try and mask our ADHD. But it's just no wonder that we have this low self-esteem. I know I'm saying it very fast, but I'm passionate. And this negative self-talk, because we've had so much negative feedback that we've thought there's something wrong with us. There's something bad about us. We need to fix it. We need to compensate for us. Hence, we go on to mask whilst under the surface, you know, beating ourselves up, feeling pretty average. So again, there's a lot of oppression wired into our nervous systems because of the amount of criticism that we have heard at such a young age that has, you know, impacted the way we think and feel about ourselves and therefore how we show up in the world. So due to a lack of education on ADHD in women and girls, we are much more likely to be improperly diagnosed with other mental health conditions. And I read I read a study from one ADHD expert, and she said that we would likely be diagnosed with other mental health conditions such as bipolar disorder, personality disorders, depression, anxiety. I was diagnosed with an eating disorder in my teenage years. I also had anxiety diagnosed, I think, around a similar time. And yet none of those were kind of flags to the medical professionals at that time that ADHD could be present. However, with the awareness and us, you know, knowing these things now, hopefully we can start to change that, right? And hopefully there will be more education provided of what ADHD in girls and women looks like. Another thing I want to talk about here is estrogen levels. I know I've referenced it on other podcasts, but because this is the Women with ADHD episode, I think it's important that we talk about how when our estrogen levels change, and that will be, for example, when we have a period, or it could be as we enter into perimenopause, or if there's something else impacting hormone levels, when our estrogen levels drop, we then experience less dopamine. Less dopamine is produced in our system. Okay, so what that usually means is that our medication that we take may be less effective. Not always, but it can be. Some women I have spoken to will change medications for a week or 10 days or 2 weeks around the time of their period so that they can compensate for that. I myself don't do that. I lean heavily on other tools. So in the last episode we had, episode number 20, I talked about why medication alone is not enough. And I gave you, I think it was more than 13 tools for ways that we can, you know, increase our levels of dopamine, of norepinephrine, of serotonin, etc., in more natural ways so that we can be increasing our own baseline level of dopamine, but also supporting ourselves at times like when our estrogen does drop. Okay, so that's just something to be mindful of. You're, you know, there's not something wrong with you. You're not doing it wrong. That is normal and probably going to happen at least once a month for a period of time. And then when you hit, and I'm not an expert on things, menopause, but when you hit ages roughly 36 to 38, and this is when I was diagnosed, was age 36, that is when hormones in the body can begin to change. And my psychiatrist did say this to me. She said the majority of women are getting diagnosed around 36 to 38 because it's right at the beginning stages of perimenopause. And therefore, when hormones begin to change, often our masking, our ways of coping and functioning in the world don't work as well. And we're like, shit, something's wrong. And we seek out help. That was, of course, the case for me. Other times that are common for women to get diagnosed are if they have a child. So, of course, there's going to be a huge change to hormone levels, but also, especially if it's your first child, it's a huge change to your life. And therefore, you know, your coping strategies and your masking and everything is kind of put to the test and on the line. So women, you know, having children, that's often a common time for them to get diagnosed. Also, women leaving college, going out into the workforce for the first time. Again, like it's that huge change in life circumstance. Another common time is when you have a big trauma, whether it be like the loss of a loved one passing, you know, something significant happening in your life. That is often another common time for women to be diagnosed with ADHD. So we've talked a little bit about masking, and I know I did an entire episode on masking, and masking our ADHD is often, you know, the ways in which we kind of hide it, often from ourselves, but definitely from other people as well, by doing things to try and appear neurotypical, shall we say. So that can often look, as I said, like people pleasing or perfectionism, and just trying to kind of hide that we have it, or even trying to, you know, do things in the way in which we think everyone else is. I think so much of our masking we have ADHD is trying to, you know, be consistent or have a morning routine or do all these other things so that we appear like neurotypical people, but at the same time not acknowledging that actually, hey, we're different and we don't have to do it that way. In actual fact, we probably don't want to do it that way. And this was something I talked a lot about in our masterclass, and we'll talk about it more here as well, is how we are intrinsically motivated humans. Which means we do things we want to do, because things we want to do are going to give us dopamine as we do them and in return for doing them usually. So it's like this double dopamine release. Awesome. So because we're intrinsically motivated and knowing that, like, if we don't want to have a morning routine, or we don't want to exercise every single morning, or we don't want to do that, we're not going to do it. But I think, you know, and this comes back to so much of that, we beat ourselves up for that. We, you know, we tell ourselves we're wrong or we're bad or we should be ashamed because we can't. It's not that we can't. It's simply that we don't want to, because it's not going to give us dopamine. Okay, so there's so many cool things we can do to play with that, right? We can make it fun, we can make it interesting, and we've talked about that before on this podcast. We can, you know, reword it, or we can look at other ways to achieve the same goal without forcing ourselves to do it in some crappy morning routine. I'm just using that as an example. Okay, I've gone a little bit off track, but I get very passionate about this. Can you tell? Now, one thing I wanted to touch on, and we did talk about this in what ADHD can look like, but having ADHD as an adult is having felt misunderstood your entire life. That was so much of my experience up until, you know, I started to kind of get my hands on these tools and then explore the possibility of having ADHD. Was I just felt misunderstood. I felt like there was something wrong with me, like I was different. And I was. It was different. And now I know, which is great. Another thing I wanted to say here is we add value to the world because of our ADHD, not in spite of it. And I want you to really hear that. Us being different adds color and flavor and beauty to the world. Otherwise, it would be boring AF. Okay? We add value to the world because of our neurodiversity, because of our ADHD, not in spite of it. Okay. And with the awareness that we have ADHD, whether self-diagnosed or officially diagnosed, with that awareness, we can begin to manage and thrive with the brain that we have. Okay. Which is so much of the work that we're doing here on the podcast. And again, if you want to come and work with me one-on-one, I coach humans who have ADHD, specifically women. Come and check out my website, zenajones.com. I would love to have a chat with you about what that looks like and how it works. But the final thing I'm just going to reiterate, which I did say at the beginning, is if you know anyone who has ADHD or not, that's okay. Please refer them to this podcast. And if you don't, please leave us that 5-star review. I really want to help more women to normalize their experience of having ADHD, but also thrive, navigate and thrive with ADHD. So I would really appreciate your help. Huge love, my friends. Have a beautiful week. I can't wait to speak with you again soon. Hey, friend. I know exactly what it's like to feel frustrated and confused with your ADHD. And to wish that you could better understand what the hell is going on in your brain. And that's exactly why I created my coaching program, Thriving with ADHD. Inside Thriving with ADHD, you learn a step-by-step process to set and finally achieve your goals, to understand yourself and your ADHD. It's where you learn to feel better and manage your emotions, and create systems and processes that work for you with your ADHD brain. This is designed for you to learn how to thrive with ADHD so you can create the life that you were meant to live. Visit zenajones.com/ADHD to learn more and book a consultation.